We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast. It is Wednesday, February 1st. Nick Whalen here with Alex Barutha. Alex, we are just a week, just over a week away, I should say, from the NBA trade deadline. That is Thursday, February 9th. Very much anticipating that. As of right now, we basically just have the Rui Hachimura deal, which doesn't feel nearly big enough. I think we're going to see quite a bit of movement over the next 8 days, but we'll have that all covered on RotoWire.com. Make sure you check everything out over there, rotowire.com/free to see all of our paywalled content. Alex, we're going to hit a couple of news items. We're going to talk a little bit about some guys who could be either on the move at the trade deadline or players who you should be prepared to buy or sell in fantasy after the trade deadline. And then after that, we will do a quick zoom through the Eastern Conference. We'll hit all 15 teams. We'll do about 2 or 3 minutes per team. And then we'll be out of here. We'll be back with the Western Conference on Thursday. What are the biggest news items that we need to get to today?
Biggest news items? Well, we got Tyrese Haliburton is expected to play on Thursday, and Devin Booker is now officially day-to-day. And of course, the Pistons-Wizards game has been postponed due to flight-related issues.
I did see that. Yeah, that was it's always kind of a panic. Like I get PTSD to the COVID days when it felt like we were having games postponed, three, four or five games a week for a while. Yeah. And for us, that just creates kind of a nightmare on the back end as far as, you know, getting all that sorted out for RotoWire and for our partner sites. But at this point we have it down to a science, but it just hasn't happened in so long. And we didn't really know, you know, whether COVID would be any sort of factor this season. It really hasn't been for the most part, but yeah, ice storms hitting the Dallas area that are apparently keeping the Pistons from playing that game, but not really a big deal. Honestly, don't really care about the Detroit Pistons right now. We got eight other games on the Wednesday night slate tonight. You're going to be on the radio with us on Sirius XM later tonight. So if you're hearing this pod and you want to hear more of Alex, make sure you tune in to Sirius XM Fantasy. We'll be talking about some of those later games. But you mentioned it, Haliburton, Booker, that's the big injury news. I just did see a note come through that, you know, the Lakers issued their normal injury report. LeBron's questionable for tomorrow. Anthony Davis, probable. Patrick Beverley, also probable. Should get him back. I think Anthony Davis has looked really good since he's come back. You know, they limited him the first two games. He came off the bench, but started last night against the Knicks, played 37 minutes in a game that went to OT, put up 27-9 with two steals. Did have five turnovers, you know, but looked like he was kind of favoring his leg a little bit late in the game. But, you know, for the most part, I think we're looking at maybe another one or two games for him to ramp up. And then he's probably back to being a borderline top five, top 10 fantasy guy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it is first game back, he only played 26 minutes. He had a huge game. Yeah. I don't know how much stock we can put in that since it was against the Spurs, and the Spurs are in a complete free fall right now. But yeah, I think Davis is bound to have a big game sooner than later, a bigger game. I think the main thing for me that I like to see is that he's been getting to the free throw line a good amount. 7 attempts in that first game in 26 minutes and against the Knicks. Yes, it went to overtime, but 9 for 11 from the free throw line. That's really nice. 2 steals as well. So yeah, I think we'll have a pretty big Anthony Davis game soon.
Yeah. And I said borderline top 5 or 10, because I'm just expecting a little bit of natural regression. Yeah. I don't know if it's realistic for Davis to come back and just be the number one guy in 8 or 9 cat, like he was before the injury. But a big part of that, like you said, is the increase in free throw attempts. Prior to the injury, he was averaging 8 free throw attempts per game. That's up from 6 last year, under 6 2 seasons ago, was at 8.5 the year that the Lakers won the title in the bubble. So we're seeing the 3-point volume decrease quite a bit for Davis. He's down to 1.4 attempts per game. Thank goodness. He's only shooting like 28% from 3. But yeah, he's been aggressive. Like when he's been out there, I think this is exactly the Anthony Davis that Lakers fans have been clamoring for.
Right. If you're going to play him at center, I think you should have him play more like a center. And that's clearly where his strengths are, right? Like he's just not a great shooter, although he's been good from the free throw line. So just get there as much as possible. He's too big to deal with on the offensive glass. So, and the trade for Rui Hachimura to me just cements, like, we want AD at center. Like we can't do this. We can't be like starting Thomas Bryant and then have AD as a 4. It's like, no, we gotta go AD at the 5 because we're at risk of, we're fighting for the playoffs at this point. And so we gotta get serious with our lineup.
All right, we'll touch on the Lakers more tomorrow when we run through the Western Conference, but let's start with the East. And as we did last time, we will go in order of standings. Let's go top to bottom this time. So you got the odd numbered teams in terms of the standings. I got the evens. That means you are kicking us off with the 36-15 Boston Celtics.
Yeah, the Celtics, they're 3-3 over the past 2 weeks, but Marcus Smart has been dealing with an injury. He's missed the past 4 games. So not too surprising that, they're on a little bit of a slide, given that, he's such a talented defender. Al Horford and Robert Williams continue to deal with sort of, that they don't play a lot. They're on back-to-backs. One of them is going to miss one of the games and the other one's going to miss the other game. But Tatum and Brown, they've been doing their thing. Brogdon has played really good lately in the absence of Marcus Smart, as has Derek White. So they're cruising a little bit, 500 over the past 2 weeks. I'm not really that concerned. They're such a definitive number one at this point. I mean, Milwaukee's creeping back up, Philly's creeping up, but they just feel so stable right now.
Yeah, no real notes for me. I mean, they are 20th in offense over the last 10 games, which is mildly concerning, but they're still putting up good numbers. It's just you have like a whole cluster of teams that are over 120 in terms of offensive rating of late. Defensively, they've been a top 5 team over the last 10, and they're still way up there in terms of net rating. You mentioned Malcolm Brogdon. I feel like we just haven't heard anything about Brogdon, which is probably a good thing. That means that he has not really been hurt all that much. He's one of those guys who you're always kind of waiting for that nagging injury to come, but he has played more minutes of late with Marcus Smart out. Last 6 games, he's averaging almost 34 minutes per game. He's putting up 25-3. But I do think overall he's benefited massively from essentially being a 33 to 35 minute per game guy these last few years to now averaging like under 25 minutes per game this season.
Yeah, I think injuries have been the main thing holding him back. It's why the Bucks didn't want to commit a lot of time or money to him and ultimately let him go. So yeah, scaling back his minutes and then, playing him more when you suffer a backcourt injury, that's the exact kind of role I think Brogdon should be in, basically just like a super six man.
This brings us to the Milwaukee Bucks, number 2 in the Eastern Conference. Feel like we went through like a mini panic on the Bucks a couple of weeks ago. Giannis is missing time. We had no timetable on Middleton, and magically both these guys are back in the lineup. They're being very, very cautious with Chris Middleton, which has been it's still somewhat concerning. I mean, usually you see guys, play limited minutes for 2, maybe 3 games, and then they're back up toward their normal workload. But he's been back now for 5 games. He's come off the bench in all 5 games, and the minutes have broken down to 15, 15, 15, 18, 20. Handful of games left before the All-Star break. I think it's pretty possible that we don't see Middleton playing 30, 35 minutes a game until after the All-Star break, which is not the biggest surprise. That they've been fine. But he has made a difference since coming back. Bucks are playing well. They're 9th in O and 9th in defense over the last 10 games. Drew Holiday is having a great first half. I think he's going to end up sneaking into the All-Star game in the Eastern Conference, maybe grabbing that final spot. Last thing, and we'll talk more about this on the XM show tonight, Alex, I can assure you of that. I don't love the Jay Crowder rumors. And look, if you're only giving up Jordan Nwora, George Hill, Serge Ibaka, and some second rounders, like I guess I'm okay with that. I just think Jay Crowder has become a wildly overrated asset.
I agree with you. I feel the same way about it as I do. I kind of have similar feelings as like the Rui Hachimura trade, where I'm like, I think Crowder's a bit overrated, like Hachimura, but the Bucks just aren't using the guys. Like, they clearly just, George Hill is just not, he's just not part of the rotation anymore. Nwora, I don't know any Bucks fans that are like, oh, I'm so mad. Like, oh, Nwora could be like a real rotation guy for us in the playoffs. No. So you're giving up essentially nothing for Crowder, who has plenty of playoff experience under his belt. But the 3-point shooting is pretty shaky with Crowder. You're just hoping to get some more size and defense. And I think you just need, I think you need more looks for when you play Giannis at center. If you're going to play Giannis at center, you just need some more reliable size. Like, you need some more forwards that you can trust. And if that's the thought, then I understand getting Crowder. But I think I agree with you. He's become a little bit overrated.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of Jay Crowder, I think, makes a lot of sense. I just don't know if he is still that guy. I it's crazy to me that there's a bidding war, and it feels like his price has somehow increased despite the fact that he just no-showed and hasn't played basketball in months. Like, do we have any idea if he's in shape? Like, is he ready to step in? Like, I feel like he's always been really, really hit or miss when it comes to like wide open corner threes. Like, I don't know. I don't see him being the PJ Tucker for this Bucks team. I don't think he has that in him personally, but we'll see.
We will definitely see. Okay. The Philadelphia 76ers, who have creeped up to the third seed in the East. They're 32-17 over the past 2 weeks. They are 4-1. You know, people continue to debate about, like, well, should James Harden be an All-Star? I think those conversations are insane. Like, he's the number two option on a top three seeds, putting up 20-10. You know, we had that big Embiid versus Jokic game the other night. Embiid looked amazing. I don't know if that's going to swing MVP votes, but if the Philadelphia 76ers continue to chug along, obviously he's going to get more looks in that category. And then other than that, you know, Maxey's had like kind of two questionable games in a row, but they're a team where their rotation is pretty set. Tobias Harris just keeps doing his thing. And yeah, man, Embiid has just looked straight up dominant lately. It's pretty ridiculous.
So the Sixers have 4 guys in the top 65 in 8 cat per game. And Tobias Harris is one of them. James Harden is one of them. And of course, Joel Embiid is one of them. Tyrese Maxey is not the 4th. De'Anthony Melton is the 62nd ranked 8-cat player, thanks to 1.9 steals per game. I had no idea.
I knew he was higher than people thought, but I didn't know he was all the way up there.
All right, the Brooklyn Nets, 4-6 without Kevin Durant. Honestly, it kind of felt like it might have been worse. I think they should be fairly happy to be 4-6. You know, Kyrie missed some time in there as well. They have a positive net rating without Kevin Durant. Seth Curry has given them a minor boost when he's been in there. Ben Simmons has not at all. He's injured now. He's missed 3 straight. In his last 12 games in which he's actually played, he is averaging 5.4 points, 6 rebounds, 7.3 assists, 1.6 steals. Okay, you know, at some point you got to score a little bit. Only shooting 46% from the field, which is pretty disastrous for a guy who should only be taking high percentage looks. And he's down to 44% at the line on the year, kind of developing into a Lonzo Ball situation where he just, it seems like it should be more damaging than it is, but he just doesn't ever get to the line. So it doesn't really matter. You know, the counting stats are enough for Simmons to be inside the top 90 in 8-cat, but I don't know. I didn't end up rostering him anywhere. I kind of swore him off to start the season, and he's still rosterable. He's still startable in a lot of leagues. I'm just glad I don't have him. It would feel kind of dirty.
I agree. Yeah, this team, like, it's, you know, Irving and Claxton are really the guys right now carrying this team, which is, you know, a bit not unexpected, but Claxton's playing really well. Like, he set career highs in scoring, I think, 3 games in a row. Has looked really good lately, just dominant on the boards. They're just going to him a lot more. Obviously, like, blocks wise, he's been fantastic. I mean, he's up to 43rd in 8-cat per game value, which is obviously really impressive. And I don't remember exactly where he was going ADP wise, but it was not high at all.
Dude, I actually looked this up last night because we were talking about him on XM, and I think I said something like, yeah, if you took him in like the 70 to 80 range, man, that really paid off. He was going way later than that. I completely misspoke. He was going like on average, and I think it was like across ESPN and Yahoo, he was at like pick 118. I mean, he's been one of the biggest risers in terms of ADP versus actual value. And we're talking a difference of like 100 spots in some leagues.
Yeah, I guess the concern was more people thought that Ben Simmons could have spent time at center. But, you know, in our outlook that we wrote, we said he's a viable top 100 target. All right, don't blame us.
That must have been seen.
Let's go get a Cavaliers.
Hold on. First of all,
okay.
A couple more notes while we're on the Nets. I'm glad you brought up Claxton. I wanted to say that. There's been real Nick Claxton all-star buzz. I saw a tweet. I just searched Nick Claxton trying to find said tweet and found a different one. And some like Nets writer is asking, what's most likely to happen this season? Nick Claxton wins most approved player. He makes the all-star game. He makes the all-defense team, or he's defensive player of the year. I mean, there's real buzz. I don't think any of those things are going to happen, but he's like the fact that he's even remotely in the conversation for any of that is wild.
I agree. He could make the all defense team one of them. Conceivable.
Possible.
But I don't think any of them are going to happen, to be honest with you. I mean, the Nets are just not. They're okay. I mean, they're the 8th ranked defense, right? If they were like top 3, then you would really be pressuring to put them in, but.
Yeah,
this is a situation to me where we can say that a guy is playing really well and above expectations without being like, you know what? He should be an all-star. It's like, I don't get like, I'm not really for the Aaron Gordon all-star buzz. I'm like, he's a role player. He's a good role player. Why is that guy supposed to be in the all-star game?
I got some bad news on Claxton, defensive player of the year. He's plus 350 behind only Jaren Jackson.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I mean, a lot
not
of the Lopez
25 to 1.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the Lopez talk has fallen off.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's quite deserved. I guess you have to ask the question, like, if you swap the two guys who would be having a more impactful defensive season, it'd probably be Claxton. But I think Jaren Jackson's got that thing locked up. Okay.
The other thing I wanted to bring up with the Nets, one, you and Mike Breen are the only two people I've ever heard call Kyrie Irving. It's like calling LeBron James or calling Kawhi Leonard. It's like kind of jarring to hear. And two, is Ben Simmons still trying to go by Ben 10, or did that just completely die?
I think that's dead.
Okay, it's not even listed on Basketball Reference. However, his nicknames are as follows: the Wizard of Oz, Big Ben, the Yank, Benny, Peacemaker, Fresh Prince, Young Socialite, and, save the best one for last, Simo the Savage.
Okay.
So if Ben 10 can't make that list, I think it's officially dead. Let's move on.
Okay. 100%. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 3-5, sliding a little bit over the past 2 weeks. Last night, they 3-point loss to the Miami Heat in a 197 rock fight. You know, Cleveland, I think they got Donovan Mitchell back, right? He's been dealing with that groin injury, so he's only played in like 3 of the past 9 games, I believe. Garland continues to book up strong performances, although he struggled a bit against Miami. Mobley has come on very strong lately. I think that's the most encouraging thing about this team right now. He started off a little disappointing, but has picked it up lately. I mean, over the past, if you can extend it pretty far out. I mean, you go over the past 14 games, he's averaging 18-9, 2.5 assists, 1.7 blocks, and shooting 57% from the field. My concern continues to be that he can't really make his free throws that well. You know, he's 65%. He doesn't get there that often, 3.6 times a game. And he's just, the 3-point shooting is so bad that I don't think he's ever going to get there when you combine that with how bad he is from the free throw line. But clearly they're surviving. They've been able to do the Twin Towers thing and it's worked fine. I'm just picking Nets at this point.
Yeah, the 3-point shooting, you know, sometimes like we've seen players who will play their first 4, 5, 6 years and then eventually develop that. It can come and go with someone like Anthony Davis. But yeah, I feel like in terms of more modern big men, you typically either have it or you don't coming right in because guys are being developed earlier and you know, you're not spending high school and college just posting up on the block and never being on the perimeter. Like you know, guys like that, it could be a weapon earlier in your career. So it's not like it's something that you necessarily have to wait until you're in the NBA to develop. So yeah, I mean, the fact that he's on pace to take more threes than last season, I guess is a good sign. Like at least you have to try to be a threat, but he's at 20% from beyond the arc, which is horrific. And then, like you said, I mean, like him being a sub 70% free throw shooter doesn't really match up with the rest of his game. Like the shot looks pretty good. He's, you know, really smooth as an athlete. He's not, you know, he's not like overweight, not lumbering, not one of those guys who has like this herky jerky big man jump shot. So I would hope that the free throw percentage can improve, but yeah, the chances that he's ever like a plus at the free throw line seem very slim.
Yeah. Cause we talk about Brook Lopez, right? Like I think he's a great example of a guy who was not a 3-point shooter at all. And right. Then made that leap. Like he went from shooting 0.2 threes per game in 2015-16 to taking 5 per game the next season. But the thing is, those seasons where he was not shooting a single three, he was still shooting 77% from the free throw line. So you had that indicator. The one positive for Mobley, yes, he's not a good free throw shooter. He is 39% on long mid-rangers this year, 14 of 36. And last year, he was also 38-39%. So there's something there that indicates like, yeah, the shot isn't broken. Like you mentioned, the form looks fine. It's not broken. Yeah. Like when I watched DeAndre Ayton shoot threes, that form is horribly broken. So to me, that's not going to happen. But I will say to close out on something like actual about the Cavaliers, they're still my favorite dark horse to win the East or to win the finals. I think that's just a really good value bet. If you're trying to bet on a dark horse coming out of the East, I still think it's them. They're a great team, man. Just a great team.
The Miami Heat quietly ascending in the Eastern Conference. They are 7-3 in their last 10, still kind of hanging around that middle area. But if you recall, like the first month and a half, 2 months of the season, Miami was pretty firmly in that like 10-14 range. And they've clearly emerged from that. They're 29-23, currently in sixth, game and a half behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. Depending on much time Kevin Durant ends up missing, you know, the Nets could end up falling below Miami. But to me, it does seem like we now have a pretty definitive top eight in the East. And you could segment from there, those eight teams being Boston, Milwaukee, Philly, Brooklyn, Cleveland, Miami, New York, and Atlanta. After that, you get into teams where you start questioning whether or not they should even want to win, which is not a great sign. And that's why they're not in that category. It's like Washington, Indiana, Chicago, Toronto to me is then its own tier. And then you get down to, you know, the real sickos, Orlando, Charlotte, and Detroit.
I agree. Yeah, the here sort of, they're muddled in that tier. They're doing it all through defense. Like, they're not a good scoring team. Like, even though you mentioned how well they're doing recently, it's still all defense. Like, they have the second best defense over the past 2 weeks, but the 26th rank offense. And that's pretty consistent with what they've been on the whole year. And they've been healthier lately. And the thing is, aside from, you know, like Adebayo and Butler are they're the sort of rocks for this team. There's a lot going on after those guys in the roster. That's just like Tyler Hero, not shooting very well at all. Like very quietly over the past 12 games, shooting 40% from the field and 31% from three. Kyle Lowry, past 12 games, 37% from the field, 26% from three. He looks pretty done. One positive they're getting is that Victor Oladipo is like a legitimate rotation player for them. He's playing real minutes. You know, the shot still isn't great. That's not really his strong suit right now, but the assist, he's passing really well. His defense is great. It's a bit of a mixed bag for Miami, and I wouldn't be surprised if they did something at the deadline, but I don't really know what there is for them to do.
Yeah, I mean, they're one of the teams that's rumored to be in on Crowder. They would probably have to piece together a package similar to what we talked about with the Bucks, you know, where you're just kind of looking at a few random young-ish bench pieces, some, you know, veteran contract or two, and then just a pile of second rounders or heavily protected first rounders. I kind of feel the same way. It's like Crowder feels like a kind of a natural fit in Miami. They're definitely the type of team that would kind of want to get him back in a Heat uniform, where of course he spent that 2019-20 season when they went to the finals. So I could see it, but again, I obviously not that high on Crowder. And you mentioned Hero. I'll close on this. He has fallen into a rut, got off to that super hot start. You know, for a while it was like he was the only healthy guy, was kind of their number one option. And now his numbers are almost identical across the board to last season, which is totally fine. I mean, sixth man of the year, still very good, but hasn't exactly taken much of a leap statistically.
Let's move on to the New York Knicks, who last night, overtime loss to the LA Lakers. Over the past 2 weeks, the Knicks are 2-5. You know, a Tom Thibodeau team that's struggling on defense, that is not good, because you may as well just bring in a coach that's good at offense. I feel so lukewarm about them. Yeah, they've been missing Mitchell Robinson, who's not expected to be back, I think, until what, mid to late February, maybe even early March.
We're talking like a week or two after the break at best.
You know, and they're piecing it together with Jericho Sims and Hartenstein. Like Barrett, Brunson, and Randall have just continued to be good, but the rotation falls off after that. And it's weird because Quickly, Grimes, like those are defensive players, and they just, it's the defense isn't getting it done. This is a team that they're just going nowhere, man. They're on the treadmill of mediocrity.
28th in defense in the six games without Mitchell Robinson. Lost, of course, last night in overtime to the Lakers, a game that they should have lost in regulation if the Lakers were a normal team that could just play like competent basketball. And, you know, Rui Hachimura is not just like throwing the ball out of bounds late in the game. That is neither here nor there. But, you know, one of the rumors with the deadline coming up is that, you know, New York would be prepared to offer three first round picks for OG Anunoby. Does that make you better? Yes. Does that improve your defense? Definitely. Is that ultimately what pushes you from, you know, team that maybe wins a game or two in the first round against the Bucks or the Celtics to actually winning that series and, you know, being a dark horse title contender? To me, no, not at all. I don't think that's the move that really puts you over the top by any means.
I mean, they're in a situation like a lot of the teams in this tier where it's like, I feel like you got to pick a direction, and I don't, because you're not going to get better naturally. Like, yeah, maybe like RJ Barrett could improve, but I don't really think Jalen Brunson is getting
RJ
that
Barrett
much better.
Will not get better.
It's possible, but like,
it's starting to feel that way.
Are any of these guys going to get better? Brunson, Barrett, Randall. Are any of these guys going to get better to the point where it changes the direction of your franchise? Right. So I think you have to just push your chips in, man. Sure. Trade 3 first rounders for OG Anunoby. Like, you got to just do something. That's my take.
Okay. And look, in defense of the Knicks, I immediately thought, wow, 3 first round picks. That seems like a lot. They do have a bunch of future firsts coming. They kind of convey at different times based on protections, but in theory, they have the Mavericks, the Pistons, and the Wizards first round picks this season due to various draft trades. As you recall, you know, they were the team that traded out to allow Detroit to get Jalen Duren in this draft. Dallas's pick is top 10 protected. That'll likely convey. Detroit's pick, top 18 protected. That will not convey. And Washington top 14, so lottery protected. That could go either way. Most likely, I would imagine Washington ends up as a lottery team and retains that pick. But either way, I mean, you could basically transfer the rights to those picks in any deal. So you're not necessarily mortgaging your entire future. You know, if you're giving up these picks that are relatively heavily protected, I don't really mind that much because Anunoby is that good. But it doesn't solve the fact that you don't have anything close to a true number one guy.
That was a point I was just going to bring up. Like, who is your number one guy at that point? Like, the hope is that Barrett eventually takes the reins and becomes that number one guy. I don't know. It feels like Randall at so many points throughout the game. Obviously, Brunson puts his impact on the game a lot, too, and he's a point guard. But without that true number one guy, you're going to have a super high floor. You're going to be able to build a really high floor. If those are your 4 guys, that's, you know, You're never going to be below 500. That would be shocking. But I don't know. I mean, what are you doing otherwise?
There's not much precedent for someone like Barrett making a massive leap. And like, the counting stats are fine. If this was like 2002, he would be a perennial all-star and like one of the faces of the league, but it's not. And he's still shooting 34% from 3. That's worse than last year. 43% from the field. He's a very bad free throw shooter for a guard as well. He's a fine defender, doesn't really translate to stats. So yeah, I mean, he's a negative VORP guy this year too, which is kind of wild when you dig into the numbers. I mean, he's like, you know, -9 differential between offensive and defensive rating. But anyway, we're going way too long on the Knicks. Let's get to the Atlanta Hawks and an equally depressing mid-level franchise. Trae Young will be back in action, I believe, tonight. He had missed a couple of games. They're at the Phoenix Suns, so he'll play in that game. DeJounte Murray, been playing well without Trae Young, had 40 the other night in a loss. It was interesting. I was looking at his usage rate compared to last year. It's only down like around like 1.5-2 percentage points, so not a huge difference. But his assist rate is down by 16 percentage points, and he's scoring almost exactly the same number of points per game. I remember doing projections and thinking that maybe the assists would end up being more sustainable because, you know, we're hearing about Trae Young spending time off the ball and being a spot up shooter and all that. And it turns out, you know, that the scoring has been fine for DeJounte, but the assists as well as the steals are down.
Yeah. For DeJounte. This is just such a confusing team, man. I don't like the in so many ways, the trade for DeJounte Murray and the trade for Gobert to pair him with Towns are very similar. It's like, you got two guys, you're making this big splashy trade for guys who play the same position. And I thought the Hawks at least got good traded. I thought that trade was fine. They didn't give up so much that I like panic. Like the Timberwolves gave up. I just don't know what you do if you're Atlanta. I mean, the thing is at this point, I mean, they, well, first of all, they changed their GM, right? Landry Fields, is that their GM now?
Could be. Yeah, he's involved. That's a very good question. Yes, he is the general manager of the Atlanta Hawks, Landry Fields.
Yeah. So they switched GMs after this trade, which is interesting.
Strange.
And I feel about the Hawks a little bit the same way I feel about the Knicks. You have, except that the Hawks actually have assets. You, like, if you're the Hawks, you have Onyeka Okongwu and you have Clint Capella. You got to, like, I think you just got to trade one of those guys. I know you don't want to trade Okongwu, and maybe, but the thing is, maybe you can trade Okongwu and DeAndre Hunter to a bad team for like something good and just go for it. John Collins is always on the trading block. I don't know what you do there. I mean, it's possible big moves are coming, and that's why they changed their GM. The Hawks have legitimate assets. I think they just got to do something with it because it's not working right now.
And they seem like stubborn to admit that it's not working. I think that's a big issue for this team. It's like they keep saying like, wait, look, we were in the East Finals not that long ago. All right, we'll get it figured out. And it's like, all right, it's been 2 years, and you've just basically been a 500 franchise for that entire time. So. Yeah, I think John Collins is going to get moved. I don't. It depends, you know, what you're getting back in that deal, but could be an opportunity for Okongwu to finally see more minutes. I think Okongwu would have a ton of value if they would put him on the table. Although he is getting to the end of the rookie deal, so then you have to start looking ahead as far as that second contract goes. But yeah, it's. I mean, Clint Capella is playing really well, so it makes sense that Okongwu is still in this reduced role, but. I mean, I would love for him to, like you said, go to a bad team and play 30 minutes a night. I think he would be a massive stud in fantasy. All right, who do we have next here?
Who do we have next? The Washington Wizards, very quietly, have not lost a game since trading Rui Hachimura. They are 6-0 over the past 2 weeks, obviously playing well on both offense and defense. And through a lot of that time, did not have Kristaps Porzingis. Porzingis has missed three of the past four games. He just returned and had a huge game against the Spurs. A game in which Daniel Gafford missed. The Wizards are just getting it done, man. I don't know if it's as simple. I mean, I will say that Rui Hachimura's point differential with the Wizards was horrible. Like, he was playing losing basketball for them. And they've been playing a lot more Deni Avdija, and Avdija's looked great, and he's a great defender. He's putting it together offensively. Kendrick Nunn's playing more for them than I thought. DeLon Wright's great on defense too. Like, they've kind of sneakily pivoted. They're like, well, we have Porzingis, Kuzma, and Beal to handle the offense. We don't need any more offensive players. We don't need Rui Hachimura. Yeah. What we need is, like, we need to put more good defenders in the lineup. And they're doing that with Gafford and Avdija and DeLon Wright. And it's working.
Yeah, all good stuff there. I hated the Hachimura deal for the Lakers. I mean, they didn't give up that much, so it's not that big of a deal. But I think anyone expecting him to make a real impact for this team just hasn't watched Rui Hachimura at all. I know there's been concerns about his effort in Washington. Always want to trade for guys who you don't know if they're going to play hard. The advanced numbers with him are terrible. He's bad on defense. Like, it's such a classic Lakers trade. It's like, you just know that they didn't do their homework on that whatsoever. And I fully expect Kendrick Nunn to now blossom in Washington. All right. I think we got like six more teams here. The Indiana Pacers, like we said at the top, should get Haliburton back tomorrow. And Lord, do they need him back, Alex. They have gone 1-9 in their last 10 games. They have plummeted down the standings. They have the second worst net rating in the NBA during those 10 games. They're turning the ball over at an alarming rate. Only the Houston Rockets are turning it over more than the Indiana Pacers. TJ McCollum's doing what he can do, but man, they really, really miss Tyrese Haliburton. And we expected this to be the case, but it's been more dramatic even than I thought.
Yeah. I mean, last time I checked, he was leading the NBA in touches. And when you lose that guy, it's like, what the hell do we do out there? Who do we give the ball to?
That's what it looks like.
For real. And, like, at least they have McConnell. Like, McConnell will gladly take all the touches and just, like, play floor general and quarterback the offense and get everybody involved. But it's resulted in some bad, struggling games for Buddy Hield and A lot of other guys on the roster. Nembhard hasn't quite done what I think a lot of us hoped he would do in the absence of Halliburton, which is obviously coming to an end. Chris Duarte playing a little bit better, which is nice to see because he was looking pretty bad there for a while. But yeah, they're gonna be good again once Halliburton's back. I'm not convinced. I mean, they just re-signed Miles Turner. I'm not convinced they'll trade Buddy Hield because he's not on an expiring contract. It expires next year. And I think this team wants to be competitive.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say on that, it's funny you bring up Duarte. You and I were talking about him last week and like, you know, how like coveted of an asset he was for a good 2-3 weeks at the beginning of last season. And we went back and like, if you search Chris Duarte, like from October, 2021, or I guess, yeah, 2021, or 22. I don't know. I got my year, whatever his rookie year was. There are so many pieces of like New York Knicks completely botched draft, didn't end up with Chris Duarte. It's hard. Like he's had a fall from grace. I mean, for a while there, it looked like he was going to be the breakout star.
No, I don't quite know what happened. He just doesn't, when I watch him play, it's been a little bit different lately because I think they've been telling him, like, you got to do something for us now because Halliburton's not here. He just wasn't very aggressive, just doesn't like to shoot. Like
big
even
problem.
Mildly contested jumpers. Just he's a little too conservative. I think that's the main problem. Mm-hmm. Let's go with the Chicago Bulls. 3-3 over the past 2 weeks, but with the best defense in the NBA over this stretch. It's not I'm pretty confused. Gonna have to call the league office and ask about whether those numbers are correct. Weirdly, they do have a better defense than offense this year. Don't really know how that makes sense. This is pretty much business as usual for them. You know, Caruso and Patrick Williams, again, are the guys making this defense work. And this team is just, again, they're in that tier of like the 500 teams with like a few good guys who probably all ideally would be the third options on their teams. But sometimes they're the first option. And I just don't think they have an identity in the sense that DeRozan feels like their best player, but how far are you going to go if that's the case? You got to make a decision on his contract, on Vucevic's contract. You just signed LaVine. They're another team. Like you got to pick a direction here, and I have no idea what they're going to do. It feels like they'll try to continue to win because they're a little pot committed, but who knows?
That provides a nice segue into a team that has major decisions to make by next Thursday, the Toronto Raptors. A little bit of a rudderless ship right now, it feels like. I think Gary Trent is going to be gone at the deadline. Sounds like Nick Nurse could be gone at the end of the season. There's an article from Shams earlier this week, kind of questioning Nick Nurse a little bit. Fred VanVleet could be on the table. Really anybody, it feels like, except for Scottie Barnes and to a lesser degree, Siakam. We talked about the possibility that OG could be moved. It feels like all the messaging from Toronto is that they want to give this team every opportunity to prove itself before the trade deadline. But at no point have they put any sort of run together. I mean, they've won three consecutive games one time this season, and other than that, they have a couple back to back wins. But like they have not had a single even 2 week stretch where they've looked like anything close to an elite team.
They have lost a decent amount of close games, I will say. I think they are better than their record, but even if that's the case, they're pretty much a 500 team. And the OG Anunoby trades are interesting. I mean, you mentioned it seems like Siakam's off the table. Siakam is a lot older than people realize. I think if you're going to tank, if Siakam's 28, like, you're going to be good again by the time he's, what, 31, 32? I don't know. But you mentioned Anunoby. I floated out a fake trade on Twitter that actually got a weird, way more traction than I thought it would, about wondering if the Blazers should trade Anfernee Simons for OG Anunoby, which I think they should if that deal was on the table. Most people thought the Blazers win that trade, but it was pretty much a 50-50 split between Blazers win and either Raptors win or it's a fair trade. So I think there are some deals out there that maybe you could do for Anunoby. But at that point, I mean, again, are you just blowing it up? And if you're blowing it up, you got to get rid of VanVleet and Scottie Barnes and VanVleet and Siakam and just build around Scottie Barnes and whoever you get back in these trades.
So I as a voter in that poll, I'm with you. I voted for Blazers win the deal, and that got 53% of the vote. I just think, you know, we've kind of seen the Lillard Simons, Lillard McCollum experiment before, and I like Anthony Simons. I just don't think that he's like the wrong guy to have next to Damian Lillard. I think we have like a decade's worth of proof that you can't have another small offensive focused guard next to Dame and expect to win more than like 45 games. So, you know, by virtue of that, like I think Simons, there are nights where he's more valuable than Ananobi, but for the Blazers, it's more just like you need to get some sort of big defensive minded wing in there, and Ananobi's at the top of the list. So it's not really a knock on Simons. It's more that Ananobi is just kind of exactly the type of player that they need.
Right. Okay. Let's go with the Magic. There's not like a ton here just because Orlando, like everybody continues to like what Orlando's doing. They're a really fun team to watch. Cole Anthony's doing windmill dunks off of 1 foot. Yeah. They're playing. I mean, they're 4-3 lately over the past 2 weeks, which is nice. Markel Fultz continues to play pretty well. Obviously, Banchero and Franz Wagner continue to essentially lead the team. Wendell Carter playing well. Jonathan Isaac, he's back.
Oh,
and resting tonight. But he's looked all right in his. I watched his debut against Boston. I thought he looked very good. He looked a little jumpy, which of course you are after. He looked shockingly good, a little jumpy, but hoovered in some rebounds that were really nice. Made some good defensive plays. Mo Wagner continues to come in and occasionally give you like a jam packed 26 minutes. So this is another team too, where I expect them to make some moves at the deadline, but a lot of those guys really aren't playing real minutes for them. Like, you know, Gary Harris and Terrence Ross and maybe Mo Bamba. I wouldn't be surprised if they try to move him. When I look at this roster, the most concerning thing to me continues to be Jalen Suggs, who the man just cannot figure it out. Like I don't know what it is. Past 12 games, 38% from the field, 25% from three. The assist to turnover ratio has been pretty nice lately, but it's like who cares at that point? He's got to figure it out, man.
He does. I don't know that it's going to happen. We'll see. I know, you know, I was mentioning this to Brandon Kravitz when we had him on the pod a month or so ago, that I saw someone use the K word when it came to Jalen Suggs, Chris Dunn. And it's hard to refute that. Yeah, it's pretty bad, man. I mean, since he came back from that latest, I think it was an ankle injury, he's played 13 games. He's only playing 15 minutes a game, which is concerning in its own right, given where the Magic are. I mean, it's not like you're playing him low minutes because you're trying to win games. Like, the fact that he can't even, you know, make a run at the starting lineup is concerning. But 5.5 points a game, 37% from the field, 23% from three. It's bad. I mean, I guess you could project out and say like the steals production would be okay if he was playing 35 minutes, but that's about it. I mean, he has not really demonstrated anything. And I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Mostly because I was just so high on him and I didn't want to be wrong coming out of the draft. But this is alarming. I mean, I talked about, you know, there not being a big track record for guys making the leap in RJ Barrett's case. There's even less of a track record of guys being this bad and this injured for 2 years and then suddenly figuring it out in year three.
Yeah. And like, there's so many guards in front of him. He's just not given the kind of, there are some other tanking teams that would let him loose a little bit more, but the Magic just don't feel a need to, I guess.
All right. We got two more. The Hornets, right now they are are they the worst or the second worst team? What team am I missing here?
They're worst.
Detroit, of course. They're the second worst team. They are 15-37. They're only 21 games out of first place. Gave the Bucks a little bit of a run for their money last night. I thought they put up about as good of a fight as they possibly could have. Milwaukee ended up winning that game 124-115, but took a big game from Giannis. You know, Holiday had to play big minutes. LaMelo, 27-point triple-double. You know, kind of keeping an eye on guys like Mason Plumlee and Kelly Oubre, who it sounds like are officially on the block. Not that that's a surprise, but, you know, they've at least engaged with some teams. I would expect one or possibly both of those guys to be gone. And you may have noticed, Alex, I went and scooped up Mark Williams in Stake League off waivers a couple of weeks ago. Still not doing enough where I'm comfortable starting him. The minutes have not really been there. He's very much foul prone. He had 4 fouls in like 15 minutes last night. That's going to be a little bit of an issue. The blocks have very much come and gone. It's not a Walker Kessler situation. But with that said, I do anticipate there being at least a couple of weeks down the stretch where I'm okay starting Mark Williams, especially if they do end up moving Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, if they move Plumlee, I assume Mark Williams is going to be like a must roster 12 team guy. And maybe Nick Richards gets back into the rotation. There's probably a world where Mark Williams ends up playing like 25 minutes a game and Richards ends up playing 20 minutes a game. And neither of them are really that relevant in fantasy and everyone's still frustrated. But I'd like to imagine they would give Mark Williams a little more time on the court. But yeah, this team feels like we're just all waiting for the trade deadline to see what happens. PJ Washington continues to be a little disappointing. Rozier pops off here and there. Hayward looks pretty good when he's out there. I will say that. But obviously he's hurt all the time. Okay. Let's go to the final team here. Shannon's Detroit Pistons. Only the fourth worst team over the past 2 weeks in point differential. Got okay. Their game. They're stuck right now in Dallas. I don't really know, man, they changed their starting lineup. So things are getting serious. Bringing Killian Hayes off the bench, going a little Jaden Ivey point guard, Sadiq Bey's back in there. Sadiq Bey's starting to have some bigger games lately. If you're like me and you're like a Sadiq Bey optimist, this has been a much needed stretch.
Yeah.
For us.
It's been a fun month.
Been a great month. I still like what I see out of Ivy. It's just, he's not quite there yet, but I actually, if you're thinking, if you're someone who has him in a dynasty format or a keeper format, I think there are just a lot of positive signals for him. He's just in an environment right now that makes it really hard on him, but he gets to the free throw line a ton. He's an active passer, stays aggressive, good athlete. So for the rest of this season, I don't think anything crazy is happening with his stats unless they trade Bojan. I think if they trade Bojan, Ivy's going to pop off. But I'd still be really encouraged if I had him in a keeper league.
Yeah, I love what I see from Ivy. Like, eye test-wise, he definitely passes with flying colors. He looked better than I thought he would. He looks more confident. He's not really having, like, the big games that you'd like to see. You think about what guys like Anthony Edwards and Jalen Green were doing, like, at this point in their rookie seasons. They would start having those, like, whoa, Jalen Green put up 38 with 7 threes last night type of games. And, maybe that's still coming for Ivy, and maybe he's just not that type of guy. He did score 30 against Utah just before Christmas. But other than that, it's just been very consistent, like 16, 8, and 3 type of games, which is still pretty good. I mean, his last 13, he's putting up 15, 5, and 4. Field goal percentage has been respectable, 42%. Still struggling from 3. And for a guard, very, very bad free throw shooter, which is concerning. I mean, he's hanging around 70%. He was a bad free throw shooter at Purdue as well. So I think he's one of those guys that for fantasy, it's going to look like he had kind of a disastrous rookie year, but I don't really think that's the case. I mean, this Pistons team has been terrible. They've had guys in and out. Obviously it's just an inept roster. Losing Cade Cunningham just completely changes the script on the entire season. So I think it's going to be easy to look back and say, yeah, this is kind of a failed rookie year for Ivy, but he's been much better in real life than in fantasy.
Yeah, it's good that you bring up the free throw percentage because, like I mentioned, he gets there a decent amount, but the percentage is bad. This is, not to keep piling on RJ Barrett, but this is a little bit of like a Barrett thing for me, too. It's like, yeah, you can get there 5 to 8 times a game, but you're shooting 70%. So is it really as much of an asset as we think? Maybe that'll improve. And he's not such a bad three-point shooter that it's super concerning, but... Yeah, you mentioned it. The team is really jumbled. No, it doesn't feel like they have like a coherent game plan or anything like that. So he's doing all right.
Yeah, it's been fine. It's been just fine. I think part of the thing with Ivy too is we've seen so many guys come in and just be awesome right away that it's a little jarring when you're drafted 5 and you're not that. It's like Donovan Mitchell as a rookie was like 21 a game, good percentages, all that. And that's just who he is going forward, you know? And like, I don't know, like it's a little concerning, I guess, because so many guys seem to start so quickly and then just become stars and you just know it right away. And you know, with Ivy, I if somebody said like, hey, is he going to be a top 30 guy in the next 3 years? I wouldn't be 100% confident saying yes. I would say chances are the answer is probably no. But at the same time, I'm still encouraged. I don't know. I don't really have a complete evaluation on him. And that's just part of the deal. When you're playing on a team this bad, you know, you never really know how much to read into certain numbers.
Right.
All right. That'll wrap it up for the East. That's all 15 teams. We'll be back tomorrow. We'll catch up on any news from the 8-game slate, not 9, because of the postponement in Detroit. Thoughts and prayers going out to the Detroit Pistons down in Dallas. Sounds like there shouldn't be any more concerns. I know the Mavs are supposed to play at home tomorrow against New Orleans. There's already some kind of plans in place for that travel. So hopefully the Thursday slate doesn't end up being affected at all. But when we're back on Thursday, we'll fill you in on Wednesday night. Make sure you listen to the RotoWire XM show. That's going to be a 3-hour show tonight. So basically you'll have to listen to this podcast and then immediately tune in to hear Alex on Sirius XM. But looking forward to that and looking forward to running through the West tomorrow.